Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the pre-Christmas festivities here in Reston, right off the Dulles Toll Road. It's not a silent night, but maybe a bit of a silent day around the MRC today. Not a big crew. We got a bunch of people who are observing their Christmas vacation. So it's quiet here today, but we are still doing the podcast this week. I hope you enjoy it. If you are just sneaking this in the midst of your family activities, like somebody says, hey, go get us some more stuff for our hot toddies. Sneak in the podcast. You got 10, 20, 30 minutes. Go into the liquor store, the supermarket. We're here. So, yes, from here at the MRC, we wish you love and joy, or as the old song says, love and joy come to you, and to you your wassail too. Whatever the wassail is. Actually, you probably want to go to the liquor store for that, too. I guess it's mulled cider, but some people put bourbon in it. So, you know, this is that time of year where we can relax a bit and maybe feel a bit of fondness for our fellow man. Or can we? Politics. Politics just keeps that from happening. This is why less political people don't like politics at the dinner table or in any dangerous super spreader gathering. I know from personal experience, I sometimes get kicked in the shin under the table. Even when I haven't said anything yet, it's just the idea that I might say something provocative. But politics is divisive, and it causes us to get verbally feisty. We're all tempted to drop that rocking tweet, get some engagement numbers. Well, today, we're going to get a little feisty about the Cuomo brothers. You may have seen them doing a comedy routine on that so-called news channel, CNN. Well, the latest comedy from Governor Cuomo's press briefing, some of the comedy comes from the softball reporters. There is no Jim Acosta in Albany. Nobody seems to ask that guy screaming CNN-style questions. But they reported the other day, on Monday, Governor Cuomo said, Santa's going to be very good to me this year, I can tell. I worked hard this year. Yeah, that's real cute. Now, according to the federal data, New York is, as of my speaking here, at 36,147 deaths from coronavirus this year. That's more than any other state in the union. And it's more than 11%, 11.2% of the U.S. total death toll. So does he get a gift? Does he get a medal? Was that a stellar performance? I mean, it's just amazing the way that they've been so rough on the federal response and in some cases very rough on the governor's responses. If the governor is, Ron DeSantis, if the governor is Kristi Noem in South Dakota, you know, they can be very harsh on Republican governors. But when we have these massive spikes in California or New York, there's no evaluation, no negative evaluation of the way these guys have performed. I mean, we all remember, like, back in May, Lester Holt did a big interview for the Nightly News with Governor Cuomo at the Jacob Javits Center. This was previously known as the infamous spot for Hillary Clinton's quote-unquote victory party in 2016. But they tried to make a field hospital there for the COVID overflow at the Jacob Javits Center. Didn't end up happening. A lot of those preparations didn't end up being needed, which is terrific. I mean, we could all be happy that that didn't happen. But again, this is where, if we look back at the year 2016, or the year 2020, we're going to say the big difference was the COVID. If we're going to say, you know, what did the Democrats think their silver bullet was in this election? It was the COVID. And obviously, any historian can say Donald Trump was not made for this kind of an event. He was not the guy who was going to be humble and bipartisan and put on a cardigan and, you know, play Jimmy Carter. That's not the way he does things. And yet, you know, these are the same people that at the time that they were hailing Governor Cuomo in May for his wonderful, stirring speeches at his press conferences. You know you can give a stirring speech at a press conference when the reporters aren't asking any questions that challenge you. You know, Lester Holt didn't send a reporter down there to ask tough questions. But, this is what they're allowed to do. Democratic governors were allowed to pose as the heroes. And, you know, then it was what? They're going to give Governor Cuomo an Emmy for his press conferences? I mean, this is just the way they kind of get away with everything. Now, there was another story that broke, I guess, back on December 13, conserving Governor Cuomo. And that was that a former aide named Lindsay Boylan said Cuomo sexually harassed her about her looks. The New York Times reported a former aide to Governor Cuomo, now running for Manhattan borough president, alleged Sunday on Twitter her ex-boss sexually harassed her for her looks. But she refused to share any more information. The tweet was, "Yes, New York Governor Cuomo sexually harassed me for years. Many saw it and watched. I could never anticipate what to expect. Would I be grilled on my work, which was very good, or harassed about my looks? Or would it be both in the same conversation? This was the way for years." I mean, this is kind of an interesting way to do it. You're going to drop your accusation on Twitter and then refuse to take questions. A spokesman for Cuomo responded, "There is simply no truth to these claims." Well, it's really easy then for the networks to go, we're not that interested in this. I mean, this is a woman who's running for Manhattan Bureau president. She is a woman of substance. You know, it's not the way that the news media treated Paula Jones back in the Clinton years, where they wrote articles about how she was a dog patch Madonna. Boylan served as Cuomo's deputy secretary for economic development and a special advisor from March 2015 through October 2018, according to her LinkedIn page. Boylan abruptly resigned her job following scrutiny of her own conduct in the workplace, including allegations of harassment, according to personnel documents obtained by the Post. This is what journalism looks like. You assess the accuser and the accused. According to an internal memo from September of that year, in 2018, three black employees went to state human resources officials accusing Boylan, who is white, of being a quote-unquote bully who quote-unquote treats them like children. So, you know, this is one of those things where you report the full story. But, you know, our national press doesn't want to do anything like this. You know, let's take the New York Times. I think the New York Times has done one fairly brief story at this point. This is the same New York Times that was extremely interested in every accuser of Brett Kavanaugh, no matter how much evidence they had. I mean, let's remember, what kind of evidence did Christine Blasey Ford have? She couldn't come up with a time or a place where she allegedly met Brett Kavanaugh. He denied ever meeting her. And yet, look at all the ink the New York Times spilled on that. This is the difference in how much evidence do you need to get a news story? The answer is, it depends on who you are. Dean Baquet, the executive editor of the New York Times, actually got a sort of a grilling from Ben Smith, who's the New York Times media columnist. And he raised Kavanaugh. And Baquet actually said, well, you know, this was a big story and an important job, you know, Kavanaugh's. Well, I mean, they asked about that in comparison to Tara Reid, accusing Joe Biden of sexual assault. So how is Brett Kavanaugh, as a lifetime appointment, something that you can throw unsubstantiated allegations at in the pages of the New York Times? But, oh, when it comes to Joe Biden, we have to wait up, you know, weeks to figure this out, and then we just have to sort of muddle through. You know, I mean, they waited a month, the networks and the media and the New York Times and so on. And then they left it as quickly as they got there. So, I mean, this is not the only thing that's happened this month. On December 8th, the website Axios, this is a bunch of liberals now, Axios, this is what the so-called mainstream media, reported on a year-long investigation into Chinese espionage. In particular, an agent named Fang Fang, or Christine Fang as she was sometimes known, had wormed her way into political circles. She'd apparently had romantic or sexual relationships with several Midwestern mayors. She had worked in the re-election campaign of one Congressman Eric Swalwell, the one-time presidential candidate and fervent cable television promoter of Russia, Russia, Russia. That's a pretty rich one. Suddenly, the people who think that the Russians are, you know, heavily involved in our politics, that Trump is Putin's poodle, you know, aren't that interested in Chinese espionage. You know, those of us of a certain age are going to remember this is sort of what happened back after the re-election campaign of Clinton Gore, where they were getting donations from China, having fundraisers with the Chinese. They had one at a Buddhist temple. Al Gore had a fundraiser at a Buddhist temple. And, you know, the networks were all like, ah, who cares? This is just something the Republicans are exploiting. So, I mean, this is the way their news judgment is. If it harms a Democrat, not interested. So Axios does this story on Swalwell, ABC, CBS, NBC, nothing. 6 days later, the Republicans are urging Nancy Pelosi to remove Swalwell from the House Intelligence Committee. Nothing. ABC, CBS, NBC, nothing. So, I mean, this is the way it works. I mean, and here's the really amazing part, and people keep noticing and updating this on Twitter. You go into the New York Times, you go into their search engine, maybe it's a crappy search engine, but you put in Eric Swalwell and punch the last month. How many stories has the New York Times done Eric Swalwell in the last month, and you get nothing? You know, at least Andrew Cuomo, they did like, you know, 300 or 400 words. Eric Swalwell, they're trying to pretend this doesn't exist. So what happens, of course, is you might go to your Christmas dinner with the relatives as you start talking about Eric Swalwell and the Fang Fang Fang, and they're all look at you like you got a third eye in your forehead, because this is what media omission does. And one of the things we're going to be really focused on here in the next 4 years is omission watch. How many stories are going to break and they're going to ignore them? And a lot of times, as in this case, it's a story in the prestigious press like Axios or Bloomberg or the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. And the networks will go, nah, this isn't really anything we have to report on, because they would say, well, this is a Republican story. So, I mean, the Democrats, they get away with these sorts of things, you know. But back to the Cuomos, you know, the news story about Andrew Cuomo now is he's posing as the grand guardian of COVID now that there's a new nastier strain of the coronavirus in the UK. He's running around saying that we should have a travel ban. Many countries now have imposed at least a temporary travel ban on visitors from the United Kingdom. You know how CNN and these people can't stand travel bans. We've already established that. Apparently, banning the British people isn't racist. Banning the Saudi Arabians, racist. Banning the British, not racist. But this is, you know, Andrew Cuomo can do no wrong, and that's especially true if you are on CNN. So when it comes to the Cuomos, we have to turn to our nighttime expert, Nicholas Fondacaro. Fellow Italian.
Oh, boy. Mamma mia.
You understand the Cuomos.
In a unique way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do love those Godfather references when it comes to Chris.
Well, he really plays into the Fredo stereotype. He even calls himself that, even though he threatens other people who call him that.
Yeah, he got really angry. I mean, he has sort of what we might joke was a roid rage sort of thing sometimes. I mean, that's part of what you're doing here. Nick has a new article about Cuomo's most Fredo moments of 2020. We thought this would be a fun thing to do. We do a series of articles here on Newsbusters that are sort of year in review, and this was fun stuff. And so what's the overarching theme, Nick?
That he really lives up to the Fredo moniker of, I'm smart, I can handle things, I want respect. Yeah.
Yeah, well... He's one of these guys who's like, you know, I always want you to know I'm a lawyer. I'm going to have my law professors on and start talking about how I was a lawyer and I'm a Cuomo.
Exactly. Like he structures his show sort of like he's in court. Like he has like the closing argument at the end of the show. And he's like, he does like Cuomo's court is like another segment that comes up occasionally. And especially when he has like his former professors on, like Alan Dershowitz and colleagues like Mukasey come on, and he just gets utterly demolished.
Yeah.
Where they have to explain to him like basic concepts of law.
So you cited Ted Cruz. I mean, yes, mm-hmm. The idea of Ted Cruz versus Chris Cuomo to many of us mm-hmm. sounds like that's not a fair fight.
Yeah, the years sort of blended together, and the Mukasey stuff was in 2019, so wasn't able to make the list though. It would be here if there was.
Yeah.
Especially like when you have him like with going up against Ted Cruz, constitutional scholar, person who lives the law as opposed to Cuomo, who no longer practices, and you kind of see why he no longer practices, considering like what happens on his show.
Ugh.
And funnier sort of arguments that he had gotten into was with Gabriel Sterling, and a Georgia election official, basically accusing him and the state election officials, which is mostly Republican controlled, of suppressing the African American vote in Georgia during the primaries.
Yeah. Now, isn't it true that they've sort of changed positions on Mr. Sterling now?
Yes, Sterling and the Republican election officials.
Suddenly now they're the brave ones.
Yep, standing up to Trump and all of that.
You know, and I think the president has every right to make his challenges. I don't so much think the president has a right to his own, you know, narrative of he won in a landslide. But it's just fascinating to me, and this is what liberal media bias is. You know, in May you're a terrible villain, you're a racist, you're some sort of vote suppressor, and then in December you're a hero. Just depends.
Yeah, it depends on where you stand against the big guy, the main object of their hate, Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of our favorite things this year, though, was the whole how the Lemon and Cuomo. Who, I mean, how long does that handoff go? They call this a handoff, but in television, that's usually like 30 to 60 seconds. These guys seem to go on for like 15 minutes.
So not necessarily that long, but there's occasions where it can go over five.
Yeah.
So it's because they are friends in real life, so they definitely use this as a time to sort of catch up and sort of bounce the same sort of crazy ideas off of each other, even though Cuomo tends to try to play devil's advocate. That's it, devil's advocate. He believes a lot of what Lemon believes, but he plays the devil's advocate, but very poorly at times.
But they got in some sort of a discussion about a mental acuity test. And it did not go well.
Oh, yes. This was back during the summer when there was the the narrative of Joe Biden being sort of not all with it. And President Trump took a mental acuity test. From all accounts, he aced it. And CNN was sort of on this little crusade to prove, like, oh, this is nothing. Anybody can pass this. You only take this test if your mental faculties are going. And both of them just sort of... One of the sections of the test was like you had to identify animal shapes. And one of them was a lion, a rhino, a giraffe, and a camel. And Lemon started calling the rhino a hippo. Cuomo corrected him that it was a rhino, and then out of nowhere started calling it an elephant. So
this is the sort of test in this case where you'd expect second graders to be able to get it right. Mm-hmm. But these are the pitfalls. If you're going to say, oh, we're going to mock a mental acuity test and then kind of flunk it on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was always sort of Trump's, his push that somehow Biden was losing it. But it was fascinating in the sense that CNN, that the Stelters and the Cuomos and the Lemons loved this whole idea that somehow Trump was mentally ill or, you know, he was dangerous. He needed mm-hmm. the 25th Amendment. So for them to turn around on a dime and say, how dare you accuse Joe Biden of being mentally insufficient for the office? You know, it's just typical again. These people are just partisan all day long.
Especially when they only did it in the first year after Trump getting into office, like maybe about 9, 10, 11 months, like after he took it was his inauguration, and they were already saying like he's too mentally unfit.
Yeah. Mentally unfit was one of their, I used to just always make it mentally ill or mentally unfit authoritarian, because that was mm-hmm. Authoritarian was the other word Stelter really liked, was that somehow democracy was always dying with Trump. Then we get to Chris getting the COVID.
Yes, yes. Chris, we learned in the spring, had gotten COVID. He sort of attributes that to when he was visiting the hospitals for doing reports and stuff like that. And he quarantined to his basement, or so we were told. Understandably, with like a lot of people who have been stuck at home, he wanted to get out. But he went out while he knew he was sick. He went out for Easter with his family and gathered with some friends who he seemed to later admit he spread it to.
Yeah.
But on a radio show, he had like this vague talk about having an interaction with this biker, like a cyclist.
Yeah.
And
it hostile. Turns,
yes. And who he sort of described as sort of just like berating him. But meanwhile, we come to find out that through interviews with this biker that this was Cuomo out and about, and he confronted Cuomo. He's like saying like, hey, shouldn't you be in quarantine? You're sick. You have this.
Yeah.
I
mean, let's remember, Cuomo was still doing his show from the basement of his house mm-hmm. with the COVID, not every night. But I mean, that was at the time I was thought, boy, mm-hmm. you know, you'd think if it was really laying you low, you wouldn't be able to do the show. And he was doing the show quite routinely. So the idea of people seeing him out, they would know, because he was sort of exploiting it. Like, you know, here I come, COVID Cuomo on television.
Oh, exactly. And while he's sort of, and while he was pushing, like, more or less, like you said, exploiting his illness and basically saying, oh, I'm going to use this to sort of help you guys understand like what this is about. He was lashing out, as you said, in the open against Ron DeSantis, praising his brother,
yeah.
pulling out like making light of like the COVID testing. Like when Andrew got COVID tested on camera.
Yeah.
He pulled it like later that day, Cuomo, like during the show, pulls out like this giant prop cotton swab,
yeah,
two of them, two different sizes, and just basically to mock his brother for that. It's like, dude, this was while there were bipartisan calls from the state legislature to investigate his brother for ordering infected elderly people back to their nursing homes, thus spreading it and killing thousands.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, I think that this is one of those completely underdone stories, was that the idea that New York said, let's send recovering COVID patients, but still infectious COVID patients, into nursing homes. Who could say that was a good idea? And who is going to be tough on people for super spreading or endangering lives? How do you not do that story?
Interestingly enough, the only report that I've seen about it on the nightly news was from NBC, and they were actually comparing what Cuomo did to what they were doing in Connecticut. Yeah. And they had the Connecticut governor on, and he was saying, it's like, what? That makes no sense to do it like that. So basically just completely destroying what Cuomo was doing and all the defenses that they were getting put up, claiming like, oh, this was in the regulations. We were told to do this by the CDC. It's like, no, the regulations were optional. You can pick and choose which ones based on what you saw. He chose that. Other governors didn't. and the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, again, this was always one of those things that was interesting, was that the some of the states that were worse, starting with New York and New Jersey, these were Democrat governors. And it feels like, especially when you watch CNN, every coronavirus death in New York and New Jersey and California and other blue states, all on Trump. You know, somehow the governors of those states who are in charge of the coronavirus response, you know that when Trump would say something about how he was in charge of the coronavirus response, they'd all say he was wrong. The fact checkers, the Daniel Dales would all come out and say, you don't control the coronavirus response, the governors do. But the governors were just somehow never responsible. You know, at the time when this stupid Q-tip joke happened, shortly after that, we noted back at the time that Trump went to one of these rallies and made a joke about maybe we should delay the testing, you know, because more testing shows more infections. And, you know, bad joke, yes. But, you know, all CNN, the network, the Q-tip network, then went on this jihad hour on the hour back there in June saying, you know, there's 120,000 people died of coronavirus. This is not funny. You know, and they, it went from one show to another show to another show. And that's where you watch this sometimes and you just go, gosh, it's like Zucker writes the script and everybody reads it.
This is the same network that when the whole Fredo thing blew up and Chris was claiming that it was an ethnic slur against Italians, got CNN to repeat the lie that Fredo was an ethnic slur against Italians. They honestly don't care about like what the facts are, and they just want to spin whatever narrative they need to spin, which is what we've learned from the inside video of their morning meetings on Project Veritas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that the other thing was there was this weird thing about how they staged this idea that Chris is now emerging like he hadn't already emerged.
Oh, exactly. They had like this whole video thing where it's like, I think it was like one of his kids was like filming from up the stairs, and you watch as he did like this whole triumphant like march up the stairs and like this sort of playful back and forth with his wife, pretending like he was still sick and wanted to get away from him. And
yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, don't lecture us about how facts and truth, facts come first, and then kind of make up a story about how he's just coming out now. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, because another thing with that family stuff, it's there was in any kind of tragedy, you're going to have the scammers, you're going to have people trying to exploit people's fear. We had that with this one where people were pushing like bogus cures with like the like with these dangerous chemicals, claiming it was a cure, basically industrial bleach people were getting sold to. And Trump and Cuomo wanted to just constantly blame Trump, saying, oh, this is these people are Trump supporters. They're buying into his lies about injecting the disinfectant. Meanwhile, on his wife's blog, she was telling people to bathe in bleach. And that was part of what helped her get over COVID.
Yeah, she had a whole bunch of weird sort of natural herbal remedies.
Yep, the crystals. And
You also go into, as we've kind of previously discussed here a little bit, Chris, you know, talking big about wanting to hurt people.
Oh, yeah, that's... As the year... Like, if anybody's watched Tucker Carlson, you've seen, like, the B-roll footage of when he does his segments about Cuomo, of Cuomo just, like, lifting, like, massive weights and just basically being, like, Guido Meathead and...
Let's put a tight CNN T-shirt on Chris.
Was he going to be the new Anderson Cooper?
Yeah, well... I suppose if the T-shirt fits tightly.
Yeah, but as the years got on and like the pandemic continued, Chris has gotten way more and more unhinged, basically rallying this, like trying to direct this like visceral hatred from his audience towards Republicans specifically. And he would make like these not so veiled threats, saying, quote, Republicans are going to, quote, lose more than this election. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, and then just this discussion about how he wants to punch people.
Oh, yeah, that was... yeah, so he was basically... It was during one of those drawn-out handoffs between him and Lemon. And Lemon was talking about, like, how do you want to deal with the critics and stuff like that? And Cuomo was just like a naked choke, punch to the sternum. And this was the same night, an hour before, Tucker Carlson was on showing video of him going maskless at a restaurant in the Hamptons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you could see where he might be angry about that. But I mean, this again, CNN's this network that's constantly tried to insist that Trump saying the media is the enemy of the people or whatever, you know, Jim Acosta specializes in this, you know, you're endangering our lives by criticizing us. He's on the air basically suggesting, you know, I want to punch somebody in the throat. Well, what do you expect that's going to do? You know, I mean, obviously, when people commit violence, you don't get to blame a television host for it. I mean, you're responsible for yourself. But it's just amazing, again, the double standard that CNN seems to have on anything and everything. And then we get to the whole idea of Chris Cuomo and peaceful protests.
Yeah, that sort of goes towards his little penchant for violence and his little his affinity for Antifa. And where during the Black Lives Matter protests and the riots during the summer, he was basically encouraging it. At one point in one of his shows, he goes, show me where it says that protesters are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Yeah.
Chris, well, it says it in the First Amendment, right to peaceably assemble.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this was a year in which a lot of businesses got, you know, their windows broken. They got burned down. You know, people looted the stores. People walked out with stuff. Whole business districts got destroyed. Look at the way Kenosha went up in flames. And you couldn't, this was one of those places where CNN, which always like, I'm going to pompously moralize at the beginning of the show and maybe at the end too, weren't going to do that about, you know, burned out businesses. And especially saying, again, we're in this sick place where the time guardians of the year is the Black Lives Matter movement. The Black Lives Matter movement didn't have anything to do with the looting and the rioting. Is that really what you're going to try to say?
Exactly. And with all the things that you just cited there, like with Kenosha and all of that, Cuomo did one segment where he was claiming that if you were focusing on the destruction and the violence, you were doing it for, quote, bad reason.
Of course.
People's homes got torched. Was that the good reason?
Yeah, well, you're distracting. I mean, this is one of the methods of media bias. You know, don't distract us from what we want to say. Don't distract us from what we want to talk about. And we want to talk about the police violence. And the minute you start talking about the looter violence or the Antifa violence, well, you're distracting it for bad reasons. Again, that's not news judgment. That's political spin. News judgment would say, you know, I think we can say that police sometimes get out of control and are too violent. And we can also say that sometimes Antifa creeps get out of control and get too violent. You know, sometimes whether it's Antifa, whether it's the Proud Boys going around looking for a fight. I just don't like street mobs in general. And I don't see why the news media would want to support street mobs in general. Again, they're like, liberal street mobs, good. Conservative street mobs, bad.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, like, you'll have, like, the conservative protests where, like, they'll have people that, like back in Richmond with all the gun rights stuff, we have open carry here in Virginia, and then suddenly just the idea of lawfully open carrying was the threat.
Yeah.
It was worse than the actual destruction of, like, stores and stuff.
Yeah.
But you would also think that they would be upset at the riots and the violence just based on the fact of that's the distraction. It's the distraction from the larger message that you got, what they would want for the change.
Yeah.
Like, that's the distraction. Be angry at those people distracting from what you want.
Right. Well, I mean, again, I think it comes down to them saying they have a right to their anger. You know, it's somehow burning out a Nike store. They have a right to their anger. I mean, that's where you just look at them and say, you know, the weird part is, as you'll recall, you know, these people started vandalizing CNN and they still couldn't condemn them the rioting.
Mm-hmm. So, yep, shattered the glass down in Atlanta. And vandalized the big CNN sign out there.
Well, I mean, ultimately, it probably did lead to, this is one of those quote-unquote mysteries, how did the Republicans do as well as they did?
Exactly, and it's they've even said it in some of like their closed door the Democratic closed door meetings. There's some of reporters that had audio leak out and stuff like that, where they were saying like we got beat really bad because of the defund the police and all of the far left stuff.
Yeah.
So it seems that the Republicans gaining some seats in the House and not turning over any state legislatures, that it sent a message of you can't go down the road of too extreme.
Well, I mean, and again, if you listen to CNN and the other networks this year, their wishful thinking spin was always, well, the Republican Party's going to pay because they never joined us in denouncing Trump to the degree we wanted the Republicans to denounce Trump. We basically wanted all the Republicans to vote to impeach Trump. And since they failed to do that, they're enablers, and they're going to, you know, the Republican Party is going to die. And yeah, that obviously didn't happen at all. I wanted to finish, since Mr. Nick is here, we need to discuss the sports moment here that happened. And that is his beloved New York Jets won a game. Now, is that, so we have to ask this question, is that like a wonderful Christmas present or just the worst possible thing that could happen for a Jets fan?
Beloved might be a stretch.
Well, you haven't thrown out the jersey.
Well, it's been hanging up for all year. The Darnold jersey has been hanging up all year. It's sort of a tough call, at least for me, because if we had lost the game, we would have gotten the first round pick, which means we would have been able to get, I forget his first name,
but Trevor
Lawrence.
Yeah.
As a QB pick. But then again, I still believe that Darnold has some ability. It's just that Darnold, to quote Colin Cowherd, that he's our guy. But at the same time, I do believe that he hasn't been properly coached, especially from Adam Gase.
Yeah, that's where you go back to Mike Greenberg's epic rant about Adam Gase has never been successful anywhere. Anyway, I just thought it'd be funny to end with that because we, you know, I personally believe, to make a political point to wrap this up, winning is never a bad thing. Even if you win the one game in December or you win two games, you know, I hate the idea, like, you know, in Major League, the movie, you know, let's lose some games so we're going to be in a better position. Well, that wasn't exactly the plot of Major League, but you know what I'm saying. So, you know, everybody, I hope you enjoyed the holidays. We're going to keep, a bunch of us, like Nick and I, are going to keep working. So come around to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day, as many times as you can stand. Thank you for listening.